What's up, everybody? This is John Micah. Welcome back to Rockin' a Hard Place.
Hey there, James here.
We are glad to have you guys back. And today on the podcast, we have a very special guest, Mr. Tommy Green. You're going to want to stick around for this one. It's going to be great.
Yes.
James, how you doing?
You know, I'm doing great. I don't know if you noticed my new threads.
I actually did.
Yeah, I'm wearing
one of the new Cutlass hats. Shameless self-promotion.
We'll get to you
right
in a second. We need to talk about our merch. Hang on.
It's awesome. They look dope.
James is wearing the new t-shirt that I have not
There's even a design on the back yet.
It's
too.
Brand new.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And
if you haven't seen the new Cutlass merch, make sure you can go to our website, cutlass.com, check out the new t-shirts, hats, all the good stuff, and click on shop in the store, and you can find that stuff there. But I digress. Today, now that Tommy's just sitting there going, guys, I thought this was, you were going to talk to me today.
Oh, James, man, everybody, hey, everyone support them. Go to the site, buy the gear, stay on trend. It's this summer,
We're going to talk about that new Holy Name merch too, though, because you guys have such awesome stuff, but we're getting ahead. We're getting ahead. John Micah, take over.
All right, James, do you want to introduce our guest today? Give us the short tidbit about who Tommy is and why he's here today, because he's awesome.
Yeah, today we have just a person I admire so much, to be totally honest. I'm just going to go straight to real with you, okay? I admire you so much. I admire who you are. We've had some really cool conversations. I've been enjoying getting to know you better. I'm a big fan of your art and your contribution to heavy music. And just how exciting that is to create in that genre. I love connecting with you about that as well, because it's just so much fun. And it's such a fun way to like share how it really feels to follow God and what that journey takes us through, highs, lows. I thank you for your voice there. Like, man, you've been just, I admire you a lot. So, yeah, today we're talking with Tommy Green, had a legendary band called Sleeping Giant, also doing some new music with a group that's kind of a duo, right? Called Holy Name. And you guys bringing in guests, buddies, musicians, other artists to contribute to it, man. That that live stream was bananas. That was so fun. We're going to talk about that. But, yeah, today we are honored to talk to Tommy Green.
Tommy, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. I feel really like I feel very embarrassed and grateful from that. Thanks, James, and thanks, John Micah, for having me on, man. I feel really pumped to just like see where this goes.
I don't know how much of the podcast you've listened to, but you never know where it might go. We could end up back on hashtag turkey facts just as easily as being serious. So, we get real here on Rockin' Hard Place.
Awesome.
That's the point.
Are you real? Oh, man. So, Tommy, tell us a bit about what you're doing right now with music, with Holy Name, kind of the concept behind it. I know you guys have some music that's out. Give us a little info there.
Yeah, man. I mean, thank you. I started this. Well, we ended Sleeping Giant in 2018. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, me and my Chrissy Green, we have three kids. Of our own. My oldest is out on her own. She's like 22, killing it. Mm-hmm. She's being awesome. And then we have three kids, you know? And so by the grace of God, I got to travel around and, you know, my wife had my back and we were like a team. And as we brought that in for a landing, I was very much just like, that's it. You know, like we did it. It's good. Kind of had a plan. And that was it for me in a lot of ways. I felt like that kind of season of that sort of energy and putting that stuff out there was kind of done. I was really trying to like move into the next season of my life. And When the lockdown happened, we have like, we had a whole community of people from all over the place. And I just thought it'd be interesting if people wrote songs in the midst of that time. And I just was like, yo, you should just record wherever you are. Cause we had people in England, we had people in Latin America, we had people in Canada, we had people all over the US. And I was like, just write a song wherever you are. We'll make it like a COVID mixtape.
Is this what you mean by like you guys had a,
right, where we were?
Is this what you mean by you guys had a community, like it built this way?
Yeah, we, for a long time, Chrissy Green and me, we sort of just created a space for people that either were kind of unseen or uncelebrated, or were, you could see leadership in and around them, but maybe they didn't have a place to kind of express that. And so, it was called the Rev Gatherings. And so that's kind of what happened, is just meeting, you know how it is. You go all over the world, you meet all these crazy people. And, so we just ended up creating a community, and that was probably 2011, 2012 is sort of when it kind of started. And we're in our 10th year of kind of getting people together. They fly into Utah once a year. And, but anyway, so that was kind of what was going on. It was just started as kind of like a, we wanted to do a worship record together and we couldn't travel. And so I just said, why don't you just record where you are? And then it was such an exhausting time that like the UK crew, they did a really amazing, like they do metal worship at their church in Birmingham. And so they recorded a song and sent it. And then, but no, like not a lot of people did other than that. And so I was like, okay, like, so me and my brother, my brother-in-law was like leading our group here. And he's one of my favorite worship leaders. And he had written a song that was just really beautiful. And I said, can we use that? I'd love to take that. And when he wrote it, I initially said, I'm going to steal that. And I'm going to put that on a Sleeping Giant record because I want everyone in the world to hear it. Not like we were big enough that everyone in the world would hear it, but I just wanted everyone to hear his song. It was so beautiful and it was important, you know, it felt like an important thing for him and I love him. And so I just wanted him to be seen for how cool he is as a person. And so anyways, we ran out of time. And so years later, I'm like, let's take that song. We'll make it like a, let me make it heavy. And, because I was going through my own kind of personal, like faith crisis, at that point, I took some old songs that I had written on the acoustic guitar and sent them to my friend Joe as well and just said, do you want to try to make these heavy? And I think it's almost like I was throwing songs in front of me that I used to believe to just try to keep my like faith up a little bit. And so he's like, okay. And so that was kind of how it started, was just we took worship songs that we'd written in our community. We made them like heavy. And that was kind of the genesis of it. And people responded so well that it was like, well, we can keep going. And then we got hit up by JD from Facedown. And he just said, do you have more songs? And I was like, I guess we could if you want. I mean, like, sure, man. And so we did that. And
That's really rad to have someone believing in the project. That's really rad to have someone believing in the project early on like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, ultimately it was, I mean, it doesn't happen without these other people. I'm such like a, I was so isolated and like, so kind of shut down in a lot of ways that it was like, I was content if, you know, so yes, absolutely. Without Joe, without JD, without like all the people that were down, like it doesn't happen because I wasn't going to force anything or push it, you know?
I want to jump in on something you just said there though. These songs that I used to believe in.
Yeah.
I know it's just a comment, but I feel like there's a lot there. First of all, are you talking about these worship songs? Are you talking about old songs that you've written before?
They were worship songs. Yeah. Okay. Old worship songs and
songs we've all sung in church. Probably everybody knows.
No, they were just personal. Okay. They were personal ones. Okay. I've recorded on my phone in like 2014. Yeah. You know,
okay.
Like
okay. So these are original worship songs that you wrote at an earlier time in your life.
Yeah.
And now you're saying songs that I used to believe.
Yeah.
But obviously there's some tension there.
Yeah.
Do you want to jump into that a little bit? And,
Yeah, sure. Cause it's, you know, if I stopped the sentence there, then I think, yeah, that would give the impression of one thing. I think,
I know it's probably a lot more load. It's like, oh yeah, here's the answer. You're like,
what happened was my relationship to the corporate church, the body of Christ. My relationship to that was changing, just because of circumstance and a lot of just weird choices that people made. And if you've been in worship stuff like you guys have, if you've been in, kind of, if you've had a chance to kind of be a part of the Christian circle, especially internationally, you get to go see everybody everywhere. You really do get a picture of what the body of Christ looks like.
Yeah.
And if you have access through creativity, you know, we as performers in the body of Christ, you get to see behind the curtain quite a lot. And sometimes that's beautiful because you gain access to wonderful people. You get to meet people that are just absolutely incredible.
Right.
And then the shadow side of that is that you get to see where the bodies are buried. Yeah. And so, so I had one final straw of, having a massive failure in the community that I had devoted a lot of time and energy to. And when that happened, I was like, I felt as though I almost needed to like divorce that culture. A bit of an overreaction, but it was still just like, I have been trying for a long time to be down, to be a voice here, to represent something well. And I felt this way about kind of the charismatic, you know, bigger kind of culture. I read all the books and then I went and tried to do everything that they said we could do. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is what made Sleeping Giant, Sleeping Giant, is we believed that we could do these things that our heroes were telling us were possible because of Jesus. We could do these things and we could experience these things and we could see these things. And so we really did that. We went hard. And at a certain point, I just couldn't anymore. And I realized that on some level, I guess I felt for the first time in a long time, I was done trying to be a part of something that I just felt, I mean, it's so prideful and arrogant sometimes, but it was real too. It was just I am not like you. I'm not going to do this anymore.
I'm not playing.
You guys suck. I've worked really hard to not suck like that. I suck all sorts of other ways, but I don't suck like that. And so I'm out. And at that moment it was like, I have to go back to, I need to figure out if I've just been a hype man for a culture that has completely broken my heart, or if there's something true here, because I'm a ride or die type of person, but I live in the gray area. Like my conviction is real strong, but I know what kind of life is. And so I try to occupy a cool space there. So I had to redefine my relationship to kind of the body of Christ because there was a massive moral failing on the part of a leader that I was serving under and helping to build all this stuff with. But personally, my wife and I had gone through incredible sorrow. I lost my little brother. She lost her mother. I lost my uncle. We had 4 miscarriages. We had a nephew overdose. We had all these people die. One of the students, one of my mentor students in my evangelism training, he died really suddenly. Like all these people were just dying. And I felt as though I was going to Jesus and he was silent. Like I couldn't see him. But like, no, I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't hear him. I could see him everywhere, but I was like lost. It was the wildest experience ever. And so my relationship to the Christian people was, I was ready to burn it. Just like, forgive me, but just, you know, no. But internally, I had never been in that position in my relationship to Jesus before. It felt as though I'm going to you and I'm asking you directly and you're ignoring me. And my babies are like dying. Like who the fuck are you, man? Like not you, like all of them. Sure. But not you. Like this. Am I like what is happening? And so, and both me and Chrissy Green were just looking at one another and just sobbing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know that he's real. We're looking at one another, and I said to her, I'm going to watch Jesus be so nice to us. Mm. And it's not going to make up for what we've lost. And I could see him being kind, but my wife is looking at me and it's going to fuck me up. She said, I feel like a fool. We're just suckers for hope. I feel so stupid for believing what I thought I believed, and I thought it was going to be different. And we just looked and we couldn't leave. And I literally said to her, I was like, I made a covenant with him before I ever made one with you. And you made a covenant with him before you ever made one with me. We can't fucking leave. There's nowhere for us to go. But I don't know where we are. And so reaching back to a time when that intimate connection was present.
Yeah.
That's where I was like, I need to keep my heart alive because I know what I was like without him. And it was hell, but I have no idea where I am. And so it was like, I needed to grab a hold of something. And I had lost so much trust in the Christian world that would have nurtured me. It was like, I could only sort of believe that I
should
meant it
have
a little
nurtured
bit.
You. That should have nurtured you.
Well, dude, they did, James. I mean, you just said they did. They did too. They're part of what made me. They're what added to Sleeping Giant as a ministry. Without that, we don't get to see all of this stuff. But they're full of shit too, man. So it was just a heartbreaker. And I guess that's the best way to say it, John, because it's not that I didn't anymore. It's that I felt like I had been lying to myself. And I was almost hoping that by pulling it in front of me like a life raft, I could hang on to it and go, remember when you used to feel like this? Remember when it was good?
Yeah.
But it worked in some ways, but I just,
did you doubt those original experiences? Right. Cause I know in my own life, it's so interwoven with that Christian culture that you're like, did I actually experience God on a personal, intimate level? Or was it just the hype of the culture that I was in?
Yeah.
Was it all just trumped up, right? Was it real? Because now that I'm hurting and my life is falling apart and I'm crying out to God and I hear nothing, was that all just a game? Was that all just in my head? Or was that genuine and was that real? And sometimes it's really hard to separate what was culture and what was this group that I was a part of and what was really God. Because there's some real interwoven pieces of truth and sinfulness of human beings, right? And it's all jumbled up in those spaces, and that gets really confusing, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to begin to actually take a scalpel out and go, you know what? That wasn't God. This piece here wasn't God. But I think that this here maybe was him, and maybe I experienced him in this moment, in this way.
Absolutely.
And how do I find that again?
Yeah.
And I know in my own life, this is still a challenge for me in even scripture, right? Because scripture is used in a certain way. It's quoted in a certain way. Yeah. And you made a comment earlier, and I almost jumped in. I waited, but I'll to come back to it.
Oh, thanks, man. I use a lot of words.
No, it's all good. We believe that we could do anything that our heroes and our leaders told us we could do, even if it was to our own peril and death, right? Holy. Because we would quote verses like, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And it's like, that's not what that verse means. It doesn't mean that I can run up any mountain at a full sprint and not die. Right? I can't jump off this cliff and not die. That's still physics, right? That's not what that verse means. Mm-hmm. And yet we would use those things and we would use kind of God's power to justify us running way harder than we should and doing way too much in our own strength. And I know I'm guilty of this. And so I've just kind of to pull out a few pieces there. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about that journey of, because I think where you're at now, you have been using that scalpel to kind of figure out, okay, where was God in all of this, and where is God moving forward, and what does that look like? So yeah, what kind of, what was that? You go from brokenness, darkness, I'm totally ticked off, I don't want anything to do with this culture anymore. And I know I felt used by the culture a lot. I felt very wounded, very used. Like I was just a draw to boost their numbers. To get more people, more tithing units into their doors, so to speak, sometimes, right? Which sounds horrible, but like, it was that way in some places. Some places we went, it literally was that. It was that, and which is horrible. It should never be that, but it was. And that's really tricky when you're going, okay, God, I'm hurting. Where are you in all of this? And was I, like you said, was I just a hype man? Is that all I was? Is that all this ever was?
Yeah,
coming around that corner. Take us through that.
Yeah. My homie Eric, like my dear, dear friend, he's been like a brother. He's been like a best friend. We've been mentors in different ways to one another. Like we've been on the journey together. Mm. He was like instrumental in me becoming a Christian. And then I think at a certain point in time, I was instrumental in a part of his relationship with Christ really becoming living too. So we've covered one another at different stages. We've been friends since we were like 18. And he said he felt a bit like a lot of ministers wanted us to be, they collected us like baseball cards is what he said.
Yeah.
So just that thing of like, we helped them look cool, or whatever. So yes. I think the biggest deal for me was like, the cool thing is that because we talked a lot personally, me and Chrissy Green, all the people that we were with, we really did want to have a personal history with the Lord. So as much as we were performing for the crowd and we were doing our thing, and I was using the platform of Sleeping Giant every single time I possibly could to preach and try to get to, you know, in my life, I actually could go back, and it's like, I've realized in that time how many miracles I'd forgotten about, which is horrible, you know, but it's like, I'm so crapping on everything. And the reality is I prayed for that 10-year-old's mom who had a cancer diagnosis and was dying. And then she came back. I prayed for her on a Friday night. She came back on a Sunday with like a clear x-ray and was like, God healed. Like I've seen, it's like, and her daughters are crying because mom's still alive. Like that's a real, and I forgot that was in Orange County in like 2010. I couldn't even, if you asked me to pick them out of a lineup, I couldn't. That's how full of shit I am. I don't remember her face because it went into the miracle bucket or whatever. Like, but I have a history of I've just seen too much.
Yeah.
But it was like, I think I wrote a song and we haven't put it out yet, but I've had this chorus for probably 9 years. And it was like, If you come like the fire you are, burn everything. If you move like the wind, I will defend your mystery. If you bleed in the garden, I'll stay with you. Just don't make me leave, right? But it's like, you be yourself with me. That's my cry. It's like, you just be exactly whoever you are. I don't want you to change. I don't need you to be something else. I don't need you to make everybody happy. I don't need you to make me happy. And then I walked face first into that song and was like, oh shit, I didn't mean it. Like, I need you to be like nicer or like better and something else. Like, I don't know if I really wanted you to like be who you are, because it's blowing up my world.
But
and
you
I had
said
to almost look at it again and go,
but you said, if you're a fire, you burn are, everything. Yeah. That is a burn powerful lyric, bro. It. Wow.
It's a dangerous song. I had a mentor that said that taught me that's a dangerous song. And I said, I'm still going to sing it because in that season of time in our little charismaniac Jesus magic world, I was like, I'm going to pray and I want Jesus to help me become who he's made me to be. And if I tell him to stop, I don't want him to. Yeah. And I remember just, it's like, no, we got to go after it. Like,
And then he did that. You're like, yeah, no. And I'm
thinking, oh my God. And I just felt that like, oh wait, this is what it feels like when my own false version of Jesus is shattered.
Yeah.
And so I realized that it's like, dude, let God be true and every man a liar. Like the fallacy is in me. Like it's not in the Almighty. It's not in the Creator.
Right. Yeah.
It's
right.
in me, bro. And at the end of some of that, I had to look at it and go, you know what? I made you into something. I said, and I went along with the suspension of belief. I played the head games. I played, what did we say in the counter traffic game? I played skull games on myself. Like I did this. So it helped me go to in a positive way. It helped me go, I need to find out what about you was true.
Yeah.
Mm. And that was it. And again, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as one Christian. That we'd have power together with all the saints. I won't know him on my own. It just won't work. And so I have to rediscover this God, and it will not be isolated from the very thing that hurt in the first place. And so I had to just get to a space, and it just takes time for anybody that would ever hear this, any of the people that you guys love that are part of your community. It's like, please just be patient, because it just, and don't say nothing maybe, because I didn't talk about this for a while. You know, I just suffered alone. And then when I posted something about it, like 4 years after, they're like, hey man, don't let the church ruin. And I was like, bitch, you're late, dude. This is like 4 years ago. Like I lost my faith a long time ago. You're going to get this. Man. It's like, I promote in public. I correct in private. That's how this works. So it was like, I had to deal with that. So if you're dealing with the brokenheartedness of, I think I need to break up with the Lord. I get it. You're not crazy.
Right.
But that also, just like any real relationship, you've got to give it time. And you have to have the self-awareness to know that even though in the moment it feels like this is everything to me, it's like, no, it's just Thursday and you're having a rough time and you really haven't thought about it for like a couple days. So like, you're just going to have to ease up. Like it's going to take a few months for you to really know where you are. Like, and I just had to like get out of my romantic head about it and go, let's be real for a second. My heart is beating and the sun is shining. That's some God stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just all over the map. So it just took me a little while to really reorient myself and discover that who Jesus is at the beginning and who God is in this beautiful story. He's enough, man. It's beautiful. And there's a whole lot added and taken away from just that. And I didn't know it. And on some level I was able to reorient myself. And by the grace of God, I would say it took 4 years, but I'm still in it. But it's, you know what I'm saying? I didn't fully die inside, but I had to die to some stuff.
Right.
And I had to be kind of crucified to a lot. I was full of shit for sure. And I thought my Christianity was like a version that made sense and was, and the reality was like, there was so much ego and so much trauma and so much of my own stuff wrapped up in that, that while I said I wanted one thing, he was really looking at the intention of my heart and going, I'm going to get that. If you're real, I'm going to go there. And when it says he desires truth in the innermost parts, like that's a real thing. And he's so cool that he puts up with us. So that's what I say, John, because I don't know. Is that helpful?
Yeah, man. It's so complex. And then honestly, and I get it. Right. Cause I'm still on my own journey, figuring stuff out. Yeah. And we carry a lot of things with us. And then at least for me, like you add like clinical depression and anxiety on top of those things.
Yes.
Some of those types of things. And if you wrestle with that and then, you know, I don't know if your story, but trauma, small traumas or big traumas, add that into the mix and you have a very complex cocktail of trying to figure out not just who God is, but who am I and how do the two of us fit together? Yeah. It's hard to have a relationship with anyone that loves you.
Yes.
If you can't figure out loving yourself or being okay with yourself or allowing God to love you and be with you in the way that you so desperately need, because you've been shutting everyone out, putting everyone in your little box. And yeah. then you use spirituality yeah. and Christianity to kind of make it all neat and tidy and spiritual. Totally. And then I make God into exactly what I want God to be. So if I work hard and I serve God and I do what's right, then he will bless what I'm doing and we will be successful. And God becomes my little genie, right? Where I'm like, yes. if I do this right, then God will bless it. And wow. we're going to win. And I feel like so much of Western Christianity, particularly here in America, move with that mindset.
Yes.
And I remember hitting a point where I was burned out. I was just thrashed from everything. And I wow. was, yeah, that same, like, you're looking at the edge of the cliff and you go, is like, am I going to jump off this right now? Because I'm done. I am done. And I had this moment with God where I was like, look at all I've done my whole life. All I've ever mm-hmm. done is tried my best to serve you, to do what's wow. right. To, my whole yeah. life has been dedicated to ministry,
yeah.
on, you know, on and on and on. Like I've bled mm-hmm. for you. My life, my family suffered for you. I've suffered for you. Yeah. Look at all we've mm-hmm. done. And now we're here. Are you kidding me? And I felt like God said to me, I didn't ask you to do all that.
Come on. Right.
But I was like,
Oh no. He's like, what up, God? Oh, no. I don't know who you're worshiping there, man. Like,
yeah,
I felt yeah. that same thing. I had a friend of mine that was a business partner out here. He's a friend, but we've been doing business stuff the last few years. And he said something kind of offhand. He wasn't even being weird or negative or anything. Didn't have a chip on his shoulder or nothing. But he said, you know, I noticed about a lot of like within your culture a little bit. And I said, what? And he said, man, there's so much competition.
Yeah.
And I think I have a worship friend of mine named Bethany, and she's an incredible worship leader. And just she's one of our family out here and just beautiful friend. And she said, my goal in her heart, this was probably 2009. She was leading a house of prayer, seemingly by herself. She would just pray yeah. by herself for hours and sing and pray. I mean, she's trustworthy in terms of like, she'll hold it down when no one's there, like
yeah.
a pure soul in a lot of ways. And she said, we have to get beyond competition. We have yeah. to get beyond competition. Yeah. And so that those inner workings of success and the hallmarks of like growth, which can very easily turn into just growth for the sake of growth, which is just cancer. Like it's so wild watching yeah. that kind of go yeah. down. But yeah, James, what are you thinking, bro?
I just feel like, honestly, maybe in sort of a prophetic sort of way, or just to encourage the church, something I want to say is I feel like the next great step in our reforming ourselves and transforming ourselves towards Jesus, I think one of the next great steps in a spiritual movement for our country is the unity of the church stepping forward from this point. I think mm-hmm. that one of the most integral things we can do is start to look at each other with the gracious eyes of Jesus and see in each other across lines from different churches or denominations, even those who may have now developed a nasty history of angst towards one another. How dare we with the name of Jesus? You know what we all sense and feel? And I travel around. I talk to lots of pastors. I'm connected with a lot of different kinds of churches, to be totally honest. And everyone's saying the yeah. same thing. Aren't we all tired of this? And don't we want so much more? You know what? The gospel yeah. is working in places like Portland, Oregon, where the country thinks that Portland is one way. Let me tell you, on the ground, what's happening in Portland is the gospel. Kingdom of God transformation is taking place. And I think that one of the next great steps forward for us is the unity of the churches. I delight in the fact that this other church has like a passion for perhaps a different kind of discipline, or I've also been kind of unwinding this very complex, tightly wound ball from my former religiosity, but like understanding that different points yeah. of view from mine aren't wrong, in the same way that like if they told me that my beliefs were wrong, I would just be like, well, you don't have authority over me telling me that. It's, you know, I happen to read the scriptures and feel this in response to, like, maybe even eschatological points, like, you know, order of events. Who cares? I love you, and I see in you a desire to give God glory. And wouldn't it be so much better for our community if we loved each other for the sake of the gospel? And I really believe that that's kind of the next great step, is to start uniting churches. I'm seeing that here in our town. I'd love to see that happening in more cities as well. But people need to look each other in the eye and say, I see in you, God. I see in you a desire to love him and love others, and let's go. Like, that is really what I feel like we're heading towards.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I've been praying in the morning, and there's a phrase in there that I think, guarded by their host, that we may attain the unity of faith. And that's cool. I think it's an old, some super old saint guy wrote it down or something like that. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's good. Yeah. That sounds good, man. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. Thanks, James.
You know what I think though? You hit something there that's interesting about the competition within ministry, right? Yeah. Like, we rarely see, and starting to, like James is saying, it's starting to happen in some places, but we rarely see churches come together, denominations come together, the body of Christ holistically come together. And I've realized, like, even within music, like, there's this weird competitiveness between bands, between worship leaders, between, right? And I'm like, where is this coming from? And I really think that's that, so honestly, but here's why though. And here's why I don't think it's embarrassing, and why everyone can relate to it, is I think at the root of it is fear. And when we move in fear, we do stupid stuff, right? Because I'm just going to go from the band level for a second. I didn't care so much about being validated by fans and things like that, and my band's bigger than your band. What I was fearful of is that we weren't going to make enough money to feed my family next year if we don't have a big single. And so this competitive piece for me was like, well, we need a big single so that we can make money so we can feed our families. And also just for validation that what I'm doing matters, and that it works, and that it's worth me continuing to do instead of doing something else where I would be home a lot more and and making more money, honestly. Right. Totally. Like, so I'm like, I need to have success in this space to validate my fears of not being enough, not actually mattering, not actually providing for my family, not doing all the things that a husband and a father ought to do. And that was the trickle down. That great fear drove me to be like, I got to beat these guys. We have to be the number one single, not them, so that I can survive. Right. And so that was like a huge driving force in me. And I see it in the church too, because I've been behind the curtain. I've been a part of it. The larger the infrastructure gets, the more stress and burdens that you carry, and the greater the fear becomes. And I've experienced in our own organization as a business owner too, the more employees you have, the more responsibility that you bear on your shoulders. The larger the budget becomes, when you're dealing with a multi-million dollar budget and you're going, okay, our mortgage is now this for our church building. You know, our staff is now 120 people. Our labor bill for the year is this. If we don't bring in X amount of millions, everyone goes home, we go bankrupt, this whole thing collapses. And now all of a sudden, survival becomes just as important as ministry, right? And so we live in fear. And then it gets mixed into our overall theology, because we go, well, what if somebody comes in here and says something that we don't agree with theologically, and splits the church and splits people off, and we can't have division within our ranks because that's going to split what we have, and it's going to threaten the institution, right? And so then all of a sudden, what was started out to be really pure-hearted and just wanting to see lives changed, now you've got this fear that's driving you, because I don't want to lose my job. I don't want this whole thing to go belly up. We've got all these people that are depending on me. Now I've got a congregation of 5,000 people that are listening to me, and where are they all going to go? And we've watched those mega churches at times implode, and the damage and the chaos that comes from that. And so you move into this fear-based survival mode of, we got to protect, protect, protect. And what that does is then you insulate, and you push away anyone that doesn't think like you, anyone that doesn't look like you, anything that we can't control. And you move in when you're fearful, you try and control as much as you possibly can. Right. And that's what I see so much of in the Christian culture. That competitiveness comes from a place of trying to, and this is coming from an ultra competitive guy, right? Like, I used to joke that, this was like half tongue in cheek, but you don't have to be competitive if you just always win, because then it's never a competition. Totally. So like, yeah, I just always win. Then it's not even a competition. I'm not competitive.
I'm not even in it. It yeah. doesn't even matter. I can be really gracious. It's so easy to be gracious from first place. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly.
I just turn around and look at the rest of you losers and I'm just yeah. nuts. It's so awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but I think so much of that competition and so much of that insulation is rooted in fear, which the irony of that is Christ does not give us a spirit of fear, right? Like, it's the right. opposite of that. And thank yet God. As human beings, we move in fear so much. And can then I when we have our spiritual crisis, we're still moving in fear. What if God isn't real? What if God has abandoned me? What if everything I've always been taught wasn't true? What if, right? Wow. And that fear, it can be paralyzing. And anyone, like if a bear runs up on you, it's fight or flight, right? Or freeze. Yeah. Like, you're either going to run, you're going to fight it, or you're going to freeze. That's your natural response to fear. Absolutely. And that's what we see. We see something, like you said, like at first moment, I'm going to fight this. I'm going to fight all you. You all suck. I don't wanna, you know, I'm going to fight you all. And then it's like, no, I'm going to run away. I'm out of here. I don't want anything to do with you guys. I'm going to be as far away as you can. And then you get to that moment where it's just you and you're all alone. And you're like, I can't even move. Where is God? Where is anyone? I am frozen. And we're really embodying the fight or flight response in our lives as a result, I think, to fear being at this deeply rooted part of within us. Right. And when that gets integral and kind of woven into the fabric of our spiritual walk, our walk with other believers, the way that we do church, the way that we do Christian culture. I think fear is so dangerous and is at the root of so many of the issues that we have. I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out. Tommy, that's what I've been seeing, at least. And I think it's
Tommy, do you find that profound. To be like the natural order of events for you emotionally? Like your first, like time and time again, as you look back and review kind of the steps you went through, do you find yourself fight first, then flight, then like forget you guys and feeling isolated? Because that seemed like that was the trajectory of that story, at least. But I'm wondering if you feel like that's your pattern.
I think for a long time, I think in ministry, I would fawn. I'd stop and I'm going to see what's going on. Like, I can handle a lot of stuff. And so, especially in church, like if ministry stuff started getting hairy, if it's like a fight at like a show, there's my first instinct a lot of time is like, let me see who's involved and then I'll get involved. When it was ministry, it would be different. And I think is that I would stop and I would try to be calm because it was like people would start swirling. And I think in general, I'm going to say this, just like when I was in Redlands, we didn't have a big budget. We didn't have anything. We had nothing. I had a group of like 130 kids from all over the place that were coming to church. And I had a co-leader that decided that I was leading the church to hell. And because I was going from like more of a Baptist kind of background of kids into like Holy Spirit stuff. And I actually got put on what could we just refer to as like, I got put on a heresy trial. And I had to sit in front of the board of this church that like let us use their building. And this dude essentially came and said I was leading all these kids to hell, that I was a false prophet. And he basically wanted me like kicked out of town. and wild. He was super messed up. That like he was so completely wild. Sideways in his own way. And we had nothing to fight for. It was completely like it was about what was true. And what I got told by a lot of mentors in that time, because he was passing out flyers about me, and I'm like 24. I'm like, yo, I just got saved. I'm like trying to teach people about Jesus, and like, let's see what happens. And I just remember I was part of a pastor's prayer group, And I remember just saying, like, I can't, what am I going to say? You know, I'm not going to say nothing. And they're like, I'm telling you, I've gone through this in my X amount of years of ministry. They said, let God defend you. And so I would just sit, and I went to this thing, and the dude just, and he was way smarter than me, but he was like, he wasn't the guy. And like, even though intellectually all the people that didn't want to believe certain things, like wanted to trust that he was smarter than me, the reality was we had two different things happening in our life. And I really, there was something God was doing in my life and people were responding to it. And so I just sat there and I was like, I can't fight back. I can't, you know, and I had a really good mentor that was like, this is pre-extreme ownership. You know, this is probably 2004, you know, 2005. And he goes, Tommy, listen, I'd love to get this dude in a room alone and jam him up, but this is all your fault. And I was like, oh. And he's like, let me tell you about why this is on you and no one else. And he just like jammed me personally behind the scenes for all of my failures in allowing this to take place and creating an environment where this took place and not leading well and not showing up well and dropping the ball here. Like, it's on me. It's on no one else. And so I show up to the heresy trial and he's got this long list of how I'm just part of this horrible tradition and all these guys are false and blah, blah, and yada, yada, and just insulted and really hurt me really profoundly with the Bible, did the Bible thing. And I couldn't read it the same for like a year and a half. I couldn't open it the same because I felt like this thing just like hurt a lot of people. Like, so anyway, so we didn't fight for all of these resources. We fighted for what's real.
Yeah.
So I haven't had the experience of building. I've never had the weight of that level of success in ministry. Like, I didn't have to. It was like we were just straight up, like we were the ugly kids on the side stage. Like, we didn't have like any, but we had credibility, but we had no resource like outside of that. And so when you say that, though, I just feel like my natural reaction was to freeze because in my past, God's going to take care of me. And even if you come after me and you do, and you wreck me on every level, because I'm like a kid that runs on shame and a whole lot of like fire, I'll outlast a lot of people. I'll be brokenhearted and super toxic, but I'm going to be here. Like, I'll be here at the end. And so on some level, like, that worked for me in this like false humility Christian paradigm. But the reality situation is like, I don't really know, because Chrissy Green and me started going to a marriage therapist a handful of years ago. And he wrote a book on the science of connection, the way that our brains actually connect. And when we're experiencing intense emotions, it floods our brains in such a way that we're not able to think clearly.
What and is so this for book us, called?
Our exercise in my, it's called The Connection Codes. And they're in Nashville. The dude's name is Dr. Glenn Hill. And Glenn and Phyllis live in Nashville. He's a licensed marriage family therapist. He's also a licensed sexologist. And so they talk about intimacy. They talk about all sorts of stuff. And his specialty in a lot of ways is when there's been an affair and there's been a full breakdown of relationship, helping couples like through the science of how our brains work, reconnect for real, like experience deep connection. And so I just had a bunch of friends that went to him and I was like, well, that's cool. And, me and Chrissy Green were good. Like, we're pretty open and free, even in our sexual relationship. Like, we don't have a lot of like weird about it. And so I was like, well, that's cool. Like, I didn't know that was even a thing. Like, yeah, that's great. And I had a friend that was like, we started talking to so-and-so and I was like, oh, how'd it go? And they said, he's totally changed the way we talk with our kids. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, do you want to talk to him? And I'm like, now I do. And so we started meeting with him and it was just before everyone started dying.
Wow.
And it was wild because the science of like processing that emotion, like when you hear hurt, fear, lonely, sad, shame, pain, joy, like there's seven like core.
Yeah.
You just, instead of like a shame, sorry, I forget shame because that's what I wake up with.
The first
anyway,
one
so
said.
It's like the thing, it's like, There's these core emotions. When you hear one, the point is to stop and go, oh, or ooh, or like, and then you go, what is that emotion? And just that 20 seconds of, well, the fear is I've believed a lie because I'm stupid. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't protect myself. The fear is that I'm going to be hurt. And all your partner needs to do is go, oh, I get that. That's it. Because then we don't need to argue about it. We don't need to talk about it. Like, it's like when your wife is having an ugly day and she's like, I just feel ugly. And you're like, no, man, you're beautiful. And like, I will make love with you right now. And you wore that outfit last week and you felt fine. What you're really telling them is like, you're stupid for feeling that way and you're wrong.
Ooh.
All you need to say is, ooh, I get that. I get that. That's it. But that scientifically like bonds people. Yeah. And so when I was going through all this stuff with the Lord, because I had the tools of like the relationship connection code, the nice way to say it is like I had experienced like a breakdown in my connection to Jesus. And I was flooded with all of this stuff. And it just took a while for me to process all of that with him. Mm. But so when it hit, I could say, I wasn't able to think straight. And so I don't exactly know if it, I think when you described it, John Michael, like, you know, the, cause usually what happens is anger is an intense emotion, but usually anger happens second. You get hit with something and then the anger comes in to fill the gap. And secondary so if emotion. You hear anger, that's the only one you ask anything about. Was that first or second?
Yeah.
And if it was first, you can go, ooh. But if it was second, you go, what was first? And a lot of times that gives people a chance to go, no, I wasn't really mad at God. Oh, I was in such pain. I felt so lonely. I felt so sad. And you can just, the sad? And then you can go, it's because and for me, shame is so cloudy that I was just flooded with shame. And the idea that not only was I not enough, but that I was wrong. Fundamentally, there's just something about me that's so wrong that there's no way for me to make it up. And look what I did. I was so wrong that I believed the wrong thing and I practiced the wrong thing and I lived a lie. And now I'm found out and it's every bit as bad as I thought I was. And I will never be able to be different. And that's just shame, you know? So it's like, how do I start? Wow. So anyway, so all to be said is like, I think when you said anger and then, you know, I'm out of here. And then, now I'm alone. What's cool about being in that quiet place is, I think when we listen, when we're silent, that's the great lesson that my little brother taught me in that is our family's pretty crazy and we have a whole lot of history of craziness. And, every once in a while, my family would get a little bit nutso and my little brother Connor, would just stop people and be like, hey, be quiet and listen. And it would just kind of like, and so when he passed, it was like, that was something that we talked a lot about was like, be quiet and listen. And so in the midst of the lockdown season, I remember that was an access point for Chrissy is because they did a Rosh Hashanah thing or they did some Jewish high holiday. And it was like, they blow the shofar. And it was the first time they did it outside because they couldn't be inside. And the shofar was a call for justice and for repentance, but it was also a call to stop and listen to the pain of the world. And Chrissy's like, that's what we need. We need people to stop fighting right now. And we need people to stop and listen to the pain. What is the pain saying? And so we were able to slow down.
Does that have anything to do with your song, Meet Me Somewhere Quiet from the Holy Name record?
I wrote that in 2014. Again, I grabbed it to say, I want this. Like, I would like this to be a thing. And
was top of mind as you were going through that experience? Like, the thought behind that song, but like, why isn't it real anymore?
Yep. Well, for me, it was more the realest part of that song in 2020, or whenever we wrote it, was the... I would cry at that part. I would listen to the rest of it. And then Joe took it up an octave when he sent me his version of it. And I was like, man, that's really up there. And then it was like, you know, Jesus could be, And when I would hear myself sing that, all I could feel was all the tension I was carrying around him. Like,
just very cathartic.
Just cry. And I'd be like, that's real. Yeah, that's the sound. That's the sound of how this feels right now.
Wow.
Which is what's beautiful about heavy music is that that's the minor keys that we need in the body of Christ, man. It's not the freaking rah-rah club. I can't do that. We don't know how to lament anyway. So because we can't just be sad, we have to be pissed or people won't listen. And then everyone's like, bro, I know you feel. It's like, that's not even how you feel. How you feel is when you're sad after this. That's actually how you feel. Like, we were like brokenhearted people. Are you kidding me? Like, you're not that mad. Like, you know. Cat Williams, you're mad at breakfast? Come on. Like, you're not even that mad. You're just sad. Anyway, so So James, I think that was the call was I was after him in that way. I could feel that I was in love with him. And also he was in love with me too. And not in a corny, dumb way. Yeah. It was like, he's the creator of my life and he loves me profoundly. And the language is just pointing to that. I felt that. I knew that was real. And then in the later season, it's like,
how has your relationship with going deeper in your faith with the Orthodox Church helped you practice these things? These seem like very developed and honest thoughts that seem to be at least daily or weekly, often on your mind. It seems like you're telling us, this is what's on my mind all the time. You know what all I mean?
Yeah. Well, before we jump all the way there, I mean, so if I understand correctly, you kind of came from a little bit more of a charismatic
background. Charismatic. Super weird. In the Jesus church. Magic. Charismaniac. Yeah. Baptizing kids in trash cans. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse the leper. Fight the demons. Do all this stuff. Yeah. Like, experience God. Like, I'm trying to lift off the floor. Like, I'm just, it's like, yo, do whatever.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you kind of,
but we're cool about it, you know, because we have like tattoos or whatever. So
then you have your faith very crisis cool. moment. You're going, what the heck? What's real? Kind of pulling out of that and then eventually ending up where you are today. Like James mentioned, I know kind of Orthodox Church has been a part of that journey. Yes. So I don't know, I guess maybe take us a little bit from, you know, that up curve as we kind of come out of that. We kind of got the dip, right?
Yeah, that's true. I forgot. Like, we're like, I'm trying to like talk about. So this will speak to some of the stuff. So I know a lot of people that if they know about anything I've done, they know that the primary thing that Chrissy Green and me are giving ourselves to is our nonprofit foundation, which is called Run Against Traffic. That is a counter trafficking and aftercare foundation. Awesome. So we want to raise a bunch of money aftercare for human trafficking survivors. If people come out, there's not enough resources for them. There's not enough places for them to go yet. The staff that are there don't have the money that they need yet. There's not enough beds yet. And so we just want to get money for them. So as they solve the problem, they have what they need. That was the point. The reason was I got hit up by a survivor. I got hit up by a kid at risk when I was in Sleeping Giant, and we watched her get taken out of an abusive home. And then a family member showed up at that like orphanage and trafficked her out. And she was found a few days later with some other girls. So we watched what just was a broken home go to trafficking in the span of just a few moments. I mean, it was crazy.
Wow.
And that one of the survivors that was in a setting like that, it was a faith-based orphanage. It was a Catholic orphanage. And one of the priests that was on staff was assaulting and raping one of the survivors over an extended period of time. It's a horrible, horrible story. And so that was 2016. When I start having my faith breakdown, I'm like, I need to figure out what about Christ is true. And the oldest church I know of is the Catholic Church. And I'm sick and tired of hearing stories of a really messed up organization that won't address the fact that they're telling people not to get married, that don't have the gift of celibacy, and they're raping little kids. So I can't mess with the Catholics. Sorry, I'm out. They are a no-go for me. And I don't care how cool all the Desert Fathers are and all these beautiful spiritual people I read about. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, forgive me, but fuck them. Yeah. Like, no, you've lost your people privileges. Like, no. And I don't believe you anymore. But you're the oldest I knew about. So I'm like, where do I go? And all of a sudden, I start having these memories of being in Redlands when I first started in ministry. And before I got married to Chrissy, I went to a bunch of healing stuff to deal with men. It was like men's group stuff. I wanted to be in a better place so I didn't bring a bunch of my baggage into my marriage with my beautiful wife. And so I remember going to like multiple weekends, and I put in a lot of work trying to do inner healing and like get self-aware and learn active listening and like just try to become healthier. And one of the dudes called me and was like, hey man, I just would love to get together for lunch. And I remember him taking me to lunch, and he said, when I got married to my wife 20 something years ago, I was in a church like yours. And he talked about this prophetic like act that they did and like all this stuff. And he's like, and then he said, hey, do you know the name of the woman at the well? And I was all, no. And he goes, I do. And I know where a church is. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah. So he starts talking about the history of the church. And I was like, oh, and he was a Southern California guy, and he was an Eastern Orthodox guy. I'm also in this. So that memory comes up as I'm like dealing with this. I'm trying to figure out where to even look to try to figure out what is Christianity. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'm reading a bunch of books because I have friends in the Rev community that are super conservative. I've got leaders in the Rev community that have come out. And so we've got a pastor that's like is gay. We've got another pastor that just took over on staff at like a queer affirming church in Southern California. We've got people that are like, that is completely wrong. But we're all homies. So like everyone just kind of rides together and we're trying to figure this stuff out. So I'm reading books from all across the body of Christ, trying to figure out like, because I just want people to have the time and the safe place to go, how do we work this out? Because in this age, it's like canceled, unfriended, no time, no nuance, no conversation. It's just over. I don't have time for that. And frankly, it's like antichrist. It's like, sorry, dude, patience. You just got to be patient with each other. Love is patient. We're going to take our time. And we've known each other for years. So it's like, these are people that we trust. And if they go through changes, let's be there for one another. So I'm trying to figure this out. So I start reading these books from all across the theological gamut. And there was a few that were like pretty edgy and like way out there for most evangelicals. And a couple of them were Orthodox theologians. And I was like, these dudes are writing stuff that's like insane for modern listeners, but they're Orthodox. Is there room in Orthodoxy for like weirdos? And what is that? And I all of a sudden I start thinking of like, wait a minute, when was Orthodox? Like, I was just like, what? Huh? Like, what even is? And so all of a sudden I realize 1,000 years before Roman Catholicism, as I know it, as an Irish Catholic kid, there's this whole 1,000 years of church that I know nothing about. Yeah. What was it there? Because if I can find any shred of truth there, at least then I can kind of track where I am. It's almost like trying to plot points to 2020. Like, how did I get here? Who informed me? Because I read a lot and I know I'm a product of a whole lot of other people I've never met before. So
yeah,
what is, you know? So that's kind of where I started reading, and I would read Orthodox stuff to go, okay, what was the point at the beginning? And that really for me was super helpful, because the simplicity of the, they would say, you know, the theanthropos, the God man, the incarnation of God. Whoa. Like, that is incredible. That's our God mythology. That's our story, that God would fully embody humanity. So we could, whoa. Like, I was like, that's enough. There's a lot there. You could spend, I don't know, thousands of years trying to understand what that is. Like, wow, that's pretty cool. And so the simplicity of historic faith, all of a sudden I realized that like that was there 1,000 years in, there's this split And then within 100 years, it's just split after split after split after split after split after split. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm just in the last one. That was like 120 years ago. And yeah. I'm like, now we're in a new one, because every one of those splits is just somebody plus the book. And now I feel like we're just in a new split, and it's these somebodies in the LGBTQI, like all that. It's people plus the book. And so that's just a new denomination. It's just going to happen, like, because that's just how it goes, is someone goes, no, it's this plus that holy writing. And it's every 100 years. I mean, it's just wild. And so I'm like, oh, that's Protestant history. Well, shoot, I just didn't know. And I had no clue. I just was like, oh yeah. Like, I knew we weren't religious like those guys. We were religious like these guys. And we were like, not religious like those guys, but we were, and I just didn't get it. And so all of a sudden, to go all the way back to the beginning, that's, to me, I went, okay, if there's something cool at the origin, I was able to kind of go, no, I'm like the Berean thing. I'm trying to prove that this is true because of what I know of you. I swear you're real. I am not. I feel shattered. So show me what's real. And I'll build my life where it's real. But if it was rock and sand, if I've built on the sand, it's fallen. It's just coming down, and it came down. Where is the rock? And I'll build there, because I'm also old enough and have been through enough to know I can't bail. I'm sorry. I just can't. Yeah, like, I just got to figure it out. And I've really got to be willing to be wrong and to let it go and to start again. And that was it. So that was kind of the journey of, like, I read a bunch of theological writings that were super heady and also super dangerous for people in 2020. And there was Orthodox people in it. And I went, whoa, okay. Is there room for me to, like, I don't even know what that is. And, like, are they going to be mean to everybody? And, like, do they care about people? Or, like, what is this? Because I got people with me. And I've literally had to come to the conclusion of, there's people in even my community that they would not feel or be celebrated in my own faith expression. But because of relationship, I could look at them and go, please don't come. If you need this, don't come here. Go there. And if you need to connect in this way, I just want people to be able to maintain their faith, even though I may not agree with all sorts of stuff. But it's like, dude, people have a right to figure it out. And most leaders don't have a right to figure it out, or you're going to get fired, and then you lose your health insurance. And then it's like, they can't. And so because we built community instead of a denomination, I was able to say to a whole crew of people, I'm just figuring this shit out. I don't have it figured out, and I don't know if it's right. And I don't know if you all should come. Please kind of leave me alone. And they were like, cool. And they love me, and they got my back. And as luck would have it, people are doing their own thing. And some people have actually even explored the Orthodox Church now. And some of my friends have even been baptized, but a lot of people have not. They're not interested in that. They don't care. And so it's like, okay, like, I'm trying to figure this out. And so that's kind of the ortho journey. And I'm still figuring it out. I'm fully on the journey, man. And people since Holy Name, because I'm just Thessalonians, maybe. When I came, I didn't just come and share a message. I came and shared my life. We shared our very life with you. And so in the hardcore scene, that's who I've tried to be. I'm not just here to preach a message. I'm here to preach my life. And so even with SG, if it came to, like, salvation methods, I was never going to tell everybody how screwed up they were. I was going to tell everybody how screwed up I was. Like, this is what God did to me. I'm not interested in trying to judge you in my behavior. Maybe I get a little wily with my words sometimes, but my heart towards people is like, listen, it's like, I'm the problem. Okay. Like, it's going to be okay.
So, I'm the problem. It's me.
It's not you. It's me for sure. So, anyway, so that's kind of what
Taylor
led me
Swift
to
lyric for you.
that's kind of what led me there. When we put the Holy Name record out, it's my journey of understanding that the Orthodox Christian, meaning Jesus's view of death, is really profound. And there's an understanding around death that I didn't have in my more modern Christianity. And it was, there wasn't a space for everything that comes with profound sorrow and loss and tragedy. I had it in the punk scene. I had it before I was a Christian. I knew everything was screwed up and somehow it was going to work out. But I didn't have that in this, like, we're going to overcome and everything's going to work out and healthy, wealthy, wise, like, bullshit. There's no room for the pain of the world in that box. Yeah. And that's where we live, is like in the pain of the world. So then when it hit me, I'm thinking, I thought, you know, I thought my Bible verse, like, I thought I'm born of God and the enemy does not touch me. Right. And I'm like trying to prophesy all this stuff to like defend my faith. And the reality is, I wonder if God wasn't walking up going, will you share this pain with me? Because I have provision for you if you will. But I'm like kicking it out because that doesn't fit. So the Orthodox view of death was so helpful in my spirit, in my heart. It allowed me to function through the loss of my little brother, who I love. I love him so much. And my two little like kids, we had four miscarriages, but I had a son that we lost at like 18, 19 weeks. And I have video of him and he was perfect. And then he was gone. Wow. And then we lost a daughter at like 16 weeks, like really shortly after that. I mean, it was fun. And I just, it's like, I didn't understand where to put that or how to process it.
That's a profound pain. And to get
theology. Dude, it's just a different one too, because it's like, it's not even real to half the world. Like, it doesn't, like, what are you going through? I don't even know. Like, what do we talk about? So I was able to process pain because that it wasn't just true for me. It works. It's not just true. It works. And I went, wow, that's cool. Then I can stay here, even though it's completely foreign to everything I've built my Christian life around. Mm-hmm. I fought really hard to be free, pretty irreverent, and pretty open to everything. You know, like I really have worked hard to be very unorthodox. And that's worked for me for 20 years. What am I doing here? And so that journey has been interesting, but it's because of what I said to my wife, which is like, I am literally trying to find the eyes of Christ, and I will become more religious if that's what it takes. I need to figure out where I am. I had lost all sense of my identity as a Christian. And so, recently I went there, right? I went to this tradition and began to understand the beauty of it and was like, wow, this is great. And I went pissed, and about 3 months in realized I can't continue on this journey with a chip on my shoulder. I can only keep going if it's beautiful, because I felt so ugly everywhere that I was like, I need to sit in beauty. And if it's not beautiful, I can't do it. I just can't. I can't. And so there was beauty within it that was nurturing to my soul. Mm. And then more recently in that phrase, you know, I'm looking for the eyes of Jesus and I'll become more religious if I have to. It was probably 5 months ago where I felt his like kind of whisper, and he's like, you know, that is also because you will see me. You can see my eyes in every person that you meet. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that's not just a church thing. It's like, you will find my eyes if you will look for them. And it was like, oh shit. So I realized I'd kind of gotten in my way again a little bit. So anyways, that's been the Orthodox kind of journey and sharing it in Holy Name. All of a sudden people were like, yo, they're hitting me up to ask questions. And my real goal is like, I'm just going to connect you with like people that know, cause I don't know. I'm literally just like, I'm on the journey, and I shouldn't be taking or presuming to take that kind of stuff on myself at all. So it's so super inappropriate when there's like really good like priests and spiritual fathers that like know what they're talking about. I'm just like, oh, you should meet my friend. Can you meet my friend? He's got books for you. I can tell you books to read, but like, I'm not building something here. Like, this is, if you want to go on the journey, you should go on that journey. But I'm not, it'd be completely inappropriate for me to be like, oh yeah, guys, like, follow me on the
No. But you know what, there's two things that really popped out to me in that story. The first being the humility to say I don't know, right? Because every one of those church offshoots with a new denomination started because someone said, no, we know and you don't know, you're doing it wrong, we're gonna do it right, it's our way, our way is better, and we're gonna start a whole new thing, right? And it's happened over and over and over, and the church gets more and more divided because we're like, no, we know, we have absolute certainty. And so that's coupled with a lack of vulnerability, right? And you have to get to a place where you go, you know what, I don't care about, we're not going to talk about your problems. I'm just going to be honest and say I'm messed up and I don't know and I don't get it. So humility and vulnerability, which, and we've talked about this, I think just recently, another episode, even from the research, that if you were not vulnerable, one of the biggest ways that we fight vulnerability is certainty. And so we move and live in certainty, and which allows us to not be vulnerable, right? Because we're like, no, we have the answer. We have the right way. And I want to be careful here because we're not saying that there isn't truth, right? There is truth. And I believe that the Bible contains truth. And I believe that God contains truth, like absolute truth, right? Mm-hmm. But when we decide that we understand God better than anyone else with absolute certainty, and that we understand the Bible in a way that only our group of people understands, I think we move into some very dangerous territory that, again, definitely, we're not vulnerable. We're not honest about our own shortcomings. And that's the entire Christian story, right? All have sinned. All of us are messed up. None of us have it right. And we're never going to understand God while we're still on this earth. Like, it's too big for us. Just too big.
That message, even that message, I think that's where I go, like, you know, I think that what I feel like I'm experiencing in kind of culture right now, and what I appreciate, I think, about the Orthodox way is that the idea, the issue of sin, the power of sin, whatever that is, it's like a sickness. It's like a virus. It infects the way that we act. It infects the way that we think about ourselves, about God, about one another. And it's like, it's just toxic. You just took in toxins. And their idea of daily coming back to the great physician and saying, I picked up some stuff about myself. I picked up some stuff in my behavior. It's like, that's what they mean by repentance. You just come back to the healer and go, heal me. Sin is almost it's like a healing issue. We pick up this toxic way of thinking and living and behaving. And so we return to God and go, hey, I got a little sick right there. And he goes, cool. And it's not the same as this like punishment based kind of legality that you experience in a lot of Western Christianity, where it's like this courtroom. That's not the atonement theory that they operate under. It's a totally different world. And so in that, mystery works both ways. And I can't tell you the number of like priests and monks that I've like talked to that are like, I could do this my whole life and ultimately it rests with God. I have no idea. And I'm like, whoa, because they say it's like, because it's God. Like, and that level of like mystery, which I think that's why Joey wrote when we were writing this song called Creed, he wrote, you know, in mystery and in truth and that tension. And so if Christians let go of the mystery that you don't like, they lose. I would say it. I said it like a handful of years ago when I was in SG, is I was like, a lot of you guys just need the spiritual gift of, I don't know. And that was just what I called it. It's like, everyone needs the spiritual gift of, I don't know. And now in our culture, I feel like people that don't love God, that don't want to necessarily, like, they don't want to give sin its place, they got to get that, I don't know, man. They got to get it, because otherwise they're going to literally build their identity around stuff that's going to make them sick. And I don't care what it is, but it's like, if we, that's what I'm experiencing now, is like, everybody needs the humility of the spiritual gift of, I don't know. And the minute they do that, wherever they are on the spectrum of anything, that's the humble moment when I think the creator can step in and redirect and reacquaint and reorient people. And it's like, I guess that's all in the pain of it all. I only had maybe a couple things where I felt like the Lord really spoke to me. And I went from being preaching all the time to being, I had one or two. And one of them was that humility was this like superpower. And it was almost like the picture was, when you just go like, it was the same thing. It was like, God help. And it was like, I'm heading this way. And it was this imperceptible. No one would have ever, you can't even see it. It only happens in the unseen realm. He goes, and barely redirects you. And at the end of that path was like a lot more brokenness and some destruction in relationship and a lot of pride and maybe some successes in some areas where you're like that guy said, some people climb the ladder of success and realize it was leaned against the wrong wall. Like maybe that path was going to take you somewhere. You're going somewhere, but like that imperceptible, I need help. Boom. All of a sudden now he's jumped you through time, which is a construct, and he's put you in a totally different location for your own destiny in your own journey. It's like he does super human stuff when we just go, help, I don't know. And I think if people will keep their heart open to like, let God be God.
Yeah.
I think he'll save lives is how I felt. I felt like he saved my life in the middle of like a training run. I'm like crying over my brother, listening to Comeback Kid and just like sobbing, like, fucking hate this. And all of a sudden I see like grass on the trail waving in the wind. Mm-hmm. And I watched it for a second and I'm just crying. And I'm like, I have no words. And I just was like, I can do that. And so I put my hands up and just started swaying. I can do that. I don't know what else to do. And I swear to God, something like happened. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa. And it was as if he showed me like, if you stayed in that hard hearted space, you were going to be in big trouble, dude. And that was so genius of you to just go, all right. Like, he's like, that was it. And I literally felt like he didn't just save my path. He like fast forwarded my progress. Inside. Wow. And so I just know people want transcendence and they want transformation. They want to experience a better like life. And I think that I don't know is like a big deal. So I like that you said that, John Mike. I think it's like, they just need a spiritual gift to, I don't know, man. And even the most certain looking Christians I've ever met with like the collars and stuff, they're like, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
But humility isn't really reflected in our culture either, right? I mean, every social justice issue, what happens is you go, we know that this is the way it ought to be. And then everyone grabs their pitchfork and runs out and says, hey, you know, we're going to die on this hill. And look at politics, look at social justice, look at everything in our culture. And what happens is they get their identity wrapped up in whatever this thing is, right? And I think that's so unique. So unique about Christianity is if you have that gifting of humility and saying, I don't know, but God does, like now your identity is in something bigger than yours, which is really what everyone's wanting. Like they're trying to find an identity in something that's bigger than themselves. So they grab on to, you know, a political party or they grab on to a social justice movement. And not that all of those things are bad, but when we move in absolute certainty and no humility, we run over people. And we hurt people and we lose our identity to those things. And I think it's so great what you said, the gift of, I don't know, like I have thoughts, I've got some pretty good ideas and I've got some scriptures in a lot of cases that can give me a lot of guidance and can give me some real help in living my life. And I think there's some real truth there that's very important. But at the end of the day, I am not fluent in Hebrew or Greek. And I do not understand every nuance of the culture of when these words were written. And God is a lot bigger than my little brain can ever fathom. And so when you come in with that kind of humility of like, you know what, I'm going to try and learn as much as I can. And I want to understand as much as I can, but I don't know. And you are a different person than me. You're wired different than me. And you may experience God in a way that I'm just not wired the same way. And that's okay. Like, you know, if you see grass and want to sway with the grass and, you know, and worship.
I felt so stupid. I'm a grown man. I'm like in the middle of this like running trail. There's people the biking grass. And walking by me. And I'm just standing, in headphones, like crying. Like crying.
Having
like,
the most emo moment.
I look like a moron.
Yes.
It's cool, guys. He's going to write a great song after this. Just keep going.
So stupid. But I'm saying this too, John, because like what's wild is I've been with now the dudes that have like, because part of what makes up, they would say like, I'll say this and I please forgive me because I'm not super good at any of this shit anymore. I swear. But like the tradition, they call the life of the Holy Spirit in the church. That's what makes up holy tradition. It's the life of the Spirit in the church from its inception. So that means the prayers, it means scripture first and foremost, the prayers, the canons that the church came together to defend against heresy, even the iconography and the architecture, the song, like there's a lot that goes into tradition, the writings of all these people. So the dudes that would say, I'm standing on 2000 years of written history, all these other people's testimony, all this artwork, and I'm fluent in Greek, and I'm Greek, and I'm fluent in Hebrew, and I'm from the Middle East, and I don't know. And I'm like, yo, that's sick. You got way more witnesses than we do, because we're just like making this crap up as we go half the time. Like, that's nuts. So even for them, they're like, it's ultimately, it all rests in the wisdom of God.
And
I think, and I've seen it now so many times that I'm like, man, that's hardware in their system. That's not software. That's like hardware in the church of God is like God. It's God's stuff. Who are we to, I mean, we're doing our best here, but like, yo, he is way bigger than we could ever. And I can't tell you the number of times I've heard it and had to look up and been like, man, they're all saying it. And so I don't feel like I'm getting duped. You know, when you talk to people and it's like, well, you know, and you're like, you're full of shit. You had a plan the minute you drove in the parking lot. Are you kidding me right now? Like, that's crazy. You're spontaneous. That's nuts. So anyways, I think the humility for most people, I think if we can get through, maybe it's just the next step that most people are really fighting for. Like even myself, like even in social justice, right? Like I really do want to make an impact on human trafficking. I'd love to put human trafficking in a museum. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm not a doctor or lawyer or like psychologist. I'm not trying to bring that stuff home. I say it all the time. I want to come back home and make love with my wife and not think about how abusive and disgusting and gross sexuality has been like weaponized against humanity. I want to have a beautiful and free and sex positive worldview for my children and for myself. Yeah. And so I can't bring all that stuff home with me.
Yeah. As God created it. I mean,
it's like, dude, it's supposed to, anyway. So that's where I go. What I can do is try.
Yeah.
And maybe in like 10 or 15 years from now, we're going to get to a point where I'm going to realize the same thing, that people are pulling like sucker moves within this industry. And we have to change it up. And so I think in general, there's a lot of people right now, it's almost like we're so fascinated with our phones because it's like the first time we've ever had like the whole world in our pocket. But like at a certain point in time in the future, we're not going to be that impressed with this anymore. Yeah. And I wonder if we just give it enough time and room to breathe, people are going to be able to kind of come to that place again where I feel like we live in the middle. We live in that gray area of gathering conviction and understanding and experience and trying to make our best guess. It is that the war of certainty and the war, there's no nuance and there's not space for conversation. And I think I think we give it time. I think there's room, but anyways, James, you're like sitting there with your hand up. Like,
only because I think there's a big delay for me. So I'm trying to like build a rhythm where you guys see that I might want to interject without overlapping you. Anyway, back to that point you were making about the I don't know and the power of the I don't know. I wanted to just share like a couple quick comments as a personal testimony, I guess, in the moment of this conversation, like about maybe our listeners are, you know, really kind of in this podcast, maybe they feel that hook in them of like listening and feeling what we're all saying here together. So I just want to encourage you to know that the power of the quote, I don't know, it is actually working. And I've seen it recently met this guy in a coffee shop as I was meeting one morning with one of our other pastors at my church. I'm co-pastoring a church with a few other really great leaders here in Portland, Oregon. It's called All City Church. And I was meeting with one of our other pastors named Kwok, and he and I were just going to grab some coffee and have like a teaching team meeting. And instead, we sat down and talked to this guy for probably 2.5 hours and then a little bit further. And I gave this guy my phone number and stuff. But really, we just started talking really deep about like faith and God and, you know, the power of the Bible and what's up with the church. And man, I think one of the ways that this guy felt connected to me right away, and now we've continued to like build a friendship, and I would say, you know, I'm like discipling this guy. One of the ways that he really kind of opened up was that I was listening to him and I was saying, yes, I see that and I have that in common here and there. But like when it came to his first question about God and, you know, why are things this way, I really just was like, I don't know. And I have felt that way too, my friend. And he was like, I'm really thankful that I didn't try and give him a prepared answer again. Like he's had that happen a few times in his life. And he's just like, I kind of instantly put my walls up when I feel people doing that. So I'm just thankful for you.
Yeah.
And like, it felt really genuine that you were just like, I don't know. And it's okay. And, but yeah, I don't know. So it's powerful. And I just wanted to share that as like a personal testimony. Like it works. Like go ahead and open yourself up to God being more in control than you think he could possibly be. And go ahead and open yourself up to the power of God speaking through you when you don't think you're worthy or fit to be a vessel, but it's his story in you. He's going to use you. You just have to say yes and be ready in the moment. But yes, I mean, there's freedom in yes and I don't know. You know, like we get to just like fully depend on him a little more, and, actually.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's so funny when you look at the way Jesus interacted with people. He didn't say, I don't know, but he also didn't answer their question. Like everyone walked away. Totally. Like, wait, what? Like what? He just opened up more things and he was extracting like more of the hugeness and beauty of God usually and of grace. And, you know, it wasn't like, okay, here's the definitive, you asked this. So here's the definitive answer to your question. He hardly ever gave a straightforward ironclad, you asked this, here's your answer. It was always like, well, what about this? He'd ask another question. He'd answer your question with a question, you know, and, and he would open up on entirely because everyone was missing the point. It's not about the answer, right? Like I could answer this and give you certainty, but we're missing the whole point here because that doesn't help you understand God or know him better or have relationship with him more. You just now have the answer that you wanted so that you can move on independently of God.
That's right? Like, well, I was going to say when you said that, I had a friend who called me in the midst of all that. I call it the back porch days because we like built this pergola and we had this like back porch and me and Chrissy would just walk outside like zombies and just sit on these like goofy swings. We had like the Target egg chair and then she had this like rope swing thing just sitting and we would just sit and look at one another like, what the fuck? Like, we're just like in silence, just like, we're just going to go sit. Our kids are like, our poor kids are just playing. But I remember this dude called me in the midst of it. Right after my son, whose name is Riggins, when we lost Riggs, he called me and was like, I'm going to tell you something. And he's kind of a prophetic kind of guy. Like hears, you know, he's one of those guys. Like it seems like he just hears from God and does stuff. And he said, my wife miscarried at like, I mean, he came home and she was bleeding in the bathroom, like bleeding out all over the bathroom floor. And, after they kind of got through that, it was a couple days later. He's like, I literally booked a hotel and went and sat in this hotel. And I was like, I need you to talk to me. Like, just like lock the door. Was like, I'm not leaving. And like, we need to do business on some level here. And, what he felt or what he said he experienced was that the Lord Jesus basically was like, I can tell you why your, baby died, but the why won't heal the pain.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk? And it was just like, so he said that in the middle. And I just remember thinking of that, like our whys, like why doesn't seem to heal the pain.
Yeah.
Presence seems to heal the pain. You know, the thing that has been resonating with me for a long time is that I think it's in Peter says, let patience complete its work. And it says, if you're patient, you'll be mature, you'll be complete, and you'll lack nothing. And so it's like, that's not if I am old enough and if I'm complete enough and if I have enough money or whatever. It's like, if I'm patient, patience does all of that. And so I just want people to know, like, when they're going through the painful season, like, give God time.
Yeah.
And you'll watch. Like, my little brother passed away, and there was dudes that hated each other in the city, in Salt Lake, that had beef for years. Like, they would fight, they'd fist fight each other, like, gunfights. I mean, it was crazy. And there was dudes pulling over in traffic and getting out and calling stuff cool because they're like, Connor wouldn't want us to fight anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen full circle moments. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you just give God time. And so for a lot of people, I feel like if they can be patient, like he said, the why isn't going to heal the pain.
Yeah. Mm.
It's presence and it's time. It really is time in the presence of God. And it's almost imperceptible because sometimes, like I said, he didn't say anything. Like I did. It's like, it really was. And that's not a hyper spiritual thing. It sucked. I would have changed it, but it really did feel like that dark night of the dark cloud of unknowing. There's some desert father talks about the dark night of the soul. It just felt like I was in God, but I was not anywhere near God, and he was not talking to me. Wow. It was the weirdest bubble I've ever been in. And over time I watched full circle, full circle, full circle, full circle. And I'm like, whoa, like you are involved, but he didn't tell me why. I still don't know why. But that's that, so when you said that, I just thought, it's interesting. We can get our answers, and we don't get him in the answer necessarily. You don't get that. You might get what you want, which is like hell on earth sometimes, man. It just sucks. Yeah. So I really appreciate that. Yeah. The why, that's what Luke said. The why won't heal. I can tell you why your baby died. The why won't heal the pain. Do you want to talk? And it was just like, whoa. So
that's good.
Well, Tommy, thanks so much for being here with
us. Good? And, we did good.
Dude, you're doing awesome.
Good.
But before we go, I definitely want our listeners to be able to know how they can find out more about your nonprofit also
please.
Where they can hear your latest music that you're working on. Love That's for people tight. To check it out. So
can I ask you
that info.
Yeah. Can I ask you this? When is this airing?
Next Monday.
Probably in, like a week.
Okay.
Most likely.
That will be like the 24th.
Yep.
I think so.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Then okay, cool.
Unless you want us to hold it another week.
We can hold it another 2 weeks. So it'd be into.
Can you do May 8th? I wrote a song for my little brother. I wrote like a holy name song for Connor, and it's May 12th is 5 years since he passed. And so I'm dropping it on the 12th, with like a music video. So, but it's a holy name song. It's just me singing and crying at the piano. It's like very November rain, but anyway, so I'm just kidding. But, I was just thinking, I'm just going to say,
So I've May 12th, you have a new song coming out,
a holy name song coming
that's
out
about your brother.
Yeah. Like a premiere for my little brother, a tribute for him and for the city. Salt Lake showed up real big for my family. The people in this town raised tens of thousands of dollars for my brother's funeral and all sorts of stuff. So it's like a love letter to him. It's also for anybody that's gone through grief. I'm hoping to put a little bit of language out there for people that, you know, whatever. So anyway, so May 12th, we've got a new Holy Name song that's going to drop, and I hope people are stoked on it.
And that's on all the streaming platforms.
Put it out. Yeah. YouTube, Spotify, and you know, whatever, get it out there. So May 12th.
Awesome.
And then
Zenga.
For people that are interested,
Why not?
For people that are interested, I run against traffic.com. That's our website. And if you're interested in, joining, we do stuff that's like, we do runs, we do fitness stuff. We do
literally,
we just want to give everyday people the tools wherever they are. So we've done like cocktail benefits. We've done barbershop benefits. We've done tattoo shop benefits. We've done rock concerts. We've done runs and walks. We've done like, I'll do a pie eating contest, whatever you're into. If we can use it to help generate resource and revenue for survivors, that's what we want to do. So whatever people were going to do anyway, we want to combine that. Cause then people know they don't have to work super hard to be a part of the solution. So run against traffic. So I run against traffic.com. That's where you can do stuff like that.
Sweet.
And, it'd be awesome. Help support, do stuff. It'd be great. And then for Holy Name, we're just, you know, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, All that stuff. Our record is on Face Down Records, so support Face Down for sure. I think there's still a little bit of vinyl left, maybe somewhere. I think a bunch of it sold out. But
cool. I need to buy one from you if you still have one.
Okay, let me look and see if I mean,
okay.
I know a guy, right?
Like, nice. I have stuff on the back of a truck. What's this podcast for anyway?
That's thing, yeah. So, yes, that's the thing. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think that's it, man. Running against traffic.
Nice. Facebook, Instagram, socials. Yeah. Just Holy Name.
Look up Run Against Traffic. It should be like an orange logo.
Okay.
Bunch of stuff like that.
And so. Is Holy Name anything weird on the handles, or is it easy to find?
Oh my God, I think it's just Holy Name Worship, but I think the
Holy Name Worship. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me make sure.
Yeah, totally.
Holy Name. Oh, it is, dude. Holy Name Worship, but the O is a X.
Oh, that was
in the word worship.
Which that's is tricky. True. Yeah, it's too bad it wasn't a K. Yeah. If it was a K, that would have been even cooler with a K.
Super cool. Anyways,
well, Tommy, thank you so much for spending time with us today, especially after all of our technical difficulties. You've been here a while. So
thanks
for hanging out with us. Really appreciate you sharing your heart and just, again, being vulnerable here and humble. And thank you for just sharing your dude, it's not easy to talk about this stuff, right? And so thank you for being willing to go there with us.
Because I'm so humble, John, like, as the Lord has called me.
Because you're such a humble person.
I'm really proud of this humility at this season in my life. You know,
you're so good at being humble.
If you're interested in learning more about humility, I've got an online course.
Good.
Yeah. You are the definitive resource on being
humble. Be the best at being humble. Starting
hungry.
Come on,
Well, dude, thanks so much. It's been awesome having you. And appreciate you sharing your story. Make sure you go check out his music as well as the nonprofit. Really good stuff happening there. And we thank you guys for listening here once again on Rockin' Hard Place. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tommy. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We love you.